This is HPR episode 1716 entitled HPR Community News for February 2015 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 88 minutes long. The summary is, Dave and Ken bore us, entertain us, with the community news.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to HPR Community News for February 2015. Joining me this evening is...
Hi, it's Dave Morris.
Hi Dave, nice to chat with you again after Fostem.
Yes, I should say excuse any noise in the background. I've got the mother and father of all, probably the grandfather of all storms going on here, and it makes the rain clatter on the roof of the extension I'm sitting in here. So there you go.
Yeah, that at least we know what it is. Do you want to introduce the two new hosts? Oh, first of all, just for people who are new to HPR, HPR is a community network where the shows are provided by you, the listener, i.e. you, the person listening with earbuds in their ears. And this month we have two new hosts, and they are?
They are Kevy, who we've heard of before, but this is the first time he's done a show himself, and Swift 110, I'm not sure how he says his handle, but that's who he is.
Excellent. He didn't actually introduce himself on the show, so
he didn't.
About this segment, which is a bit of a pity. Probably a good tip for everybody is, could you introduce yourselves on the show? That would be actually excellent. Okay, and the purpose of this show is that once a month we just give you a rundown. If you're just listening to the podcast feed, we give you a rundown of what's going on the HPR mail list, which you should join, especially if you're a host. And that is where the decisions about HPR are taken, such as they are. And also comments that have been left on the various different episodes. And we also go through the episodes one by one for the last month just to have a quick chat about them. And the first episode of last month, oddly enough, was HPR 1696, and that was HPR Community News, a live event that we did as Fostem.
Yeah, that was fun to do. The audio was a bit of a challenge though, I think, wasn't it?
It was a stupendous challenge in actual fact, and we completely had no preparation done for recording a live show like that, because I've never recorded a live show like that. Thought that there might be some sort of PA in the room that we could plug into, but as it turned out, everybody had a good recorder, and because they had good recorders, they were only picking up the person who was talking, so it was a nightmare. But I found a way back on Foss Weekly, there was a German show on about an audio site where you could upload your audio, and it would I think it was developed by a group of students who wanted to tidy up their notes from lectures, and it absolutely polished it up brilliantly. So
it did a pretty good job actually. Anybody who was slightly off mic was, because of the nature of the recorders we were using, as you said, was very, very quiet, and you could hear the thing suddenly grabbing that sound and boosting it up when it came to them. It probably worked better if you'd actually been there and heard people, but it did do an amazing job. Astonishing.
I had a before I had done a lot of it on the train as I was coming up from Potsdam, because I only had it was on the Sunday night and the show needed to be posted in a few hours, so it was a bit scary, I must say. But
yes,
so I had something that would have worked, but this worked quite well. I'm trying to find the name of the service actually that I used, but I can't. I'll see if I can put it in the show notes for this episode. Anyway, the following day we had the first of the FOSDEM episodes, and we interviewed Bradley and Karen from the Software Freedom Conservancy, and basically all the FOSDEM episodes. Let's just kind of, I don't know, let's, I suppose, chat about them now and then as one big thing, I suppose.
Yeah, it was nice to hear Bradley and Karen being interviewed. I was quite happy I managed. I didn't meet Bradley, but I did meet Karen, who seems a really nice person. Pleased to meet her.
It was a nice event, actually. I think they're planning on doing that again next year. So this was at the Conservancy event. So it's actually a great idea, because you go and, you know, there's a restaurant and you can get warm food after traveling and meet up with people. And we met up with loads of people, and pretty good hotel as well.
Yeah, the hotel was great, wasn't it? Yeah. I was sad I didn't make that that meeting. My plane was quite seriously delayed due to snow in London, apparently.
Oh, wow.
Don't know quite what that had to do with me, but there you go.
I was blaming it on Ryanair, almost Belgium.
Well, that as well, yeah. The fact that I landed in an airport about an hour away didn't help a lot.
No. Yeah, you're not the first to do that. Okay, so we had, during the interviews, we had a interview with GNOME, with Fedora, with OpenStack, CentOS.
Yeah, those were some interesting discussions there, actually. It was, you seem to have caught some of the, well, it's the nature of FOSDEM, I guess, isn't it, that some of the key movers and shakers in these projects are there in front of you. So it sounds like you got quite a few of them there.
Yeah, very much so. And the people on the booth are more than happy to, no, you need to talk to him. You need to talk to him. There's project lead. It's your job. This is why you got elected. And they're more than happy just to, to put the head developer or whoever is supposed to be leading the project in and give you a chat. So, except, of course, for Debian, who just have regular people, and Puppet. And own Cloud Dispora. Dispora was an interesting talk as well. I got a lot out of this. I mean, I love these because I don't need to do anything. It's just, hi, I'm from HBR, and they kind of know who we are now. So they just are more than ready to chat to us, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great way of getting to know some of the project as well, I think, isn't it? It's, I mean, there were things there that I hadn't really heard about before, so it was, you know, it's a good way to raise awareness if you're not up to speed with some of these things.
Yeah, exactly. And we had requested a booth, and in a way I'm glad we didn't get it, because it is a lot of work. You know, there's, I've said it before and saying it again, if you don't know how busy your normal conference is, the conference booths at FOSDEM are just phenomenally busy. And it seems as well that they got even busier and busier as the thing was beginning to wind down.
Yeah, it was mobbed all the time that I saw it. It is a massive thing, and it's hard work being on those desks, I think, on those tables.
Absolutely. And one of the interviews I enjoyed the most myself was the Wikimedia one. Largely because I hadn't interviewed them last year, and also the guys from the Chaos Computer Club, or, you know, Hack the Knit. They had a nice thing, and it was nice to catch up with all the other guys as well. Colab, and then Doodoo Linux. Mike had some questions in about them, and I missed the opportunity to do that, but. By the time I got up there, I was so tired and hungry, I was beginning to lose it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, all props to you for the number of interviews you managed to get there. I was knackered just wandering around going to a few talks and stuff. So you were on the go all the time. So yeah. Great stuff.
Actually, on the Sunday morning, we got into some talks and stuff on GNU Radio, which was fantastic. I really enjoyed that. So the following, let's just jump forward to episode 1700. Today with a Techie, episode 2000. And for those of you who don't know, Hacker Public Radio is a rebranding of Today with a Techie, which was a kind of pun on the Twit network when that started off. So as of episode 2000 came out 9 years, 3 months and 27 days after the project started. So in order to do that, I put together a show of everybody introducing themselves, and it was a lot of work.
It was great though. It was lovely. I just loved that. I think you got quite a few responses to that as well. I think people were sitting there listening. I know I was listening. When's it going to be with you? When's it going to be me? Oh yeah, yeah. I'm there. I'm on the map. It was lovely. It was a brilliant thing to do. I do appreciate how much work it must have taken though.
It was a bit of work, and to be honest, I was listening for myself because I didn't know when I was coming up, because I'd taken the audio extracts and put them in as like because the ID numbers were from both Today with a Techie and from HPR, and they restarted the IDs, so I wasn't 100% sure what the IDs were going to match up, so I was just listening to when I my own name came up. I actually missed that Today with a Techie theme tune. It's really cool.
Yes, I did actually listen to some of those back in the day. That was around about the time I first started to listen to podcasts. It was quite nostalgic to hear that for me as well.
Yeah, and I just got word from Droops that he's found the database and some archive episodes. So we'll be getting those as well. Which is fantastic news. I know you're.
Oh, cool.
So cool. That was that episode 1700. And if anyone has any ideas for HPR 2000, then give us a shout. Then we had FOSDEM part 4 of 5, Agora voting, which was an interesting one. An open source voting system that's auditable. I think that's a brilliant idea. The DIY book scanner. I love the open embedded. The German and Belgium Amateur Radio Union were there. XBMC, and I know Kai, who was my nephew, was there. Was thrilled that that XBMC were there.
Oh, cool! Yeah, yeah. I thought the explanation of Cody was came across really, really well. He'd obviously done that many times, but he did a great job.
Absolutely. Yep. And then we had ReactOS, and this was Aleski was a fantastic guy to interview as well. Just come across as a really, believing in this project. Fantastic. Yeah, CoreOS. Yeah, go on.
His enthusiasm was amazing, wasn't it? Yeah, I listened to him a couple of times because he sounded so enthusiastic.
Absolutely, yeah. CoreOS and Wolf SSL. Pico TCP,
Ultimaker.
Yeah, the Ultimaker was pretty cool, actually. The other three are focused on embedded stuff, so they kind of and the cloud and stuff. So it's very polished. The Ultimaker guys seem like guys who are very much there, community, not dragging the other guys away from the community or anything. But that was pretty cool. I'd love to have an Ultimaker. Oh, I really would.
Yes, you'd need a fair amount of cash to afford one, unfortunately.
Yeah, but they're reasonably priced, But
true.
They're quite open source, free software viewing. After the interview, you can take the thing. You can take all their designs and make your own. So that's pretty cool. I had a laugh with Carl Daniel and the Core Boot and Flash ROM. It was just absolute. It was really nice because we had a conversation before and after, so it was a very, very nice guy.
Yeah, I rushed off to check to see whether my motherboard would take it after listening to that. I did know about it, but I'd never really looked into it very much. Unfortunately, it can't, but next one, definitely.
Yeah, there again, I was just explaining to a guy in work, you know, you want to run Linux on a piece of hardware, by definition, it's all your first attempt is always going to be the hardest because you've not made any effort to buy, you've not known about Linux in order to buy hardware that will be suitable to run Linux excellently. You know, the further on you go, the easier it gets because, right, my next laptop is going to have all Intel hardware and I'm going to check my printers before I buy them. And you're not just going down and going, oh, I'll buy the coolest laptop out there, you know.
Yeah, I know. I'd actually, the machine I'm working on here is one I built myself, but I didn't know enough at the time to spec a motherboard that would do this. I'm not sure what the status of core boot was at that time, but I know the UEFI stuff was the big deal at the time. But but hindsight's great, isn't it?
Yeah, but then again, you like with me with this laptop, you end up getting you make a choice like I want to buy a laptop with it running a Linux OS. Or no OS, and that whittled down the field of available laptops to two. So it's a pretty easy choice then.
Yeah, true enough.
Then the last of the interviews was with the SAS NOGS, and as soon as I can, I'm going to participate in that project. It's just, I did one of my first jobs when I came to the Netherlands was working on satellite operations, and it is... love of mine, so pretty cool stuff. Enjoyed all that. Enjoyed Potsdam. It was great to meet you as well.
Yeah, it's always good to get there and to meet several HPR people as well. That was fun. That was great.
JWP and name escapes me. What?
To be frank. And Nightwise. Nightwise was there.
And Nido, of course. Nido Media.
Nido was there. Yep.
His father.
I'm missing somebody, I'm sure, but...
From Finland, who we met on... not from Finland. Who was on the Identica.
Yeah, I know. Brain fade.
Hold on. I'll truncate silence of this one. Do you have Identica open by any chance?
Yes, I do. It's... The person you're thinking of is Mats.
That's...
By the handle Sazius, I think. On Identica.
Yeah, we went out to dinner with Mats and actually JWP did. No, we missed Mats that night, but he was staying at the same hotel.
That's right. Yeah. We met up with him afterwards, and he was. We had a drink with him, and while he was having his rather late dinner.
Ah, that's correct. Yeah, so good laugh. Okay, that was basically Fostem. It was and is a fantastic. Fantastic, weird thing. You and I were there in the ground floor of the exhibition place, and just looking around and commenting on how many people we knew from the podcasting thing. And you know, all of a sudden, RMS walks in behind us. You know, and Karen. We were having a chat with Karen, and other people. It's just very, very weird and surreal.
Absolutely, I was not expecting to. I thought you were joking when you said, "Oh, look, there's RMS," and there he was, as large as life. Yeah.
Yes, and nobody started singing the Free Soccer song. But we will rectify that today. Okay, moving on. First-time host Kevi, kind of taking a look at various CD ripping software. All kind of an interesting approach, actually. But sadly,
yes.
My favorite, K3B, was left out.
I noticed that. Yeah, it's the one I use, if I ever do use one.
I actually love K3B as a tool. It was on the par with not Audacity, but what was that MP3 music player? Sorry, I'm very, very, very tired. Amarok. Amarok and K3B were the two... must have applications on KD when KD was there.
And yes, absolutely.
K3B took the approach of, right, it's working perfectly. We're now just going to not mess with it anymore. But Amarok went off and threw everything out and started again and messed the whole lot up.
Oh, it's a pile of rubbish now, in fact. Not to put too fine a point on it.
Absolutely. I actually had my brother who's completely anti, deliberately anti anything Linux, running a machine with Amarok on it, Amarok 1, because it was such a cool app at the time. But anyway, this is a good episode. Very good idea. One thing that bugs me about Kevy's and Unseen Studios episodes is I can't speed up the audio
because of the music.
Excellent music in there. So I want them to have a feed of just music, all the music from all the shows in a particular week, and put that out in a separate feed. And that way I won't feel guilty about speeding up their music.
Yes, I'm not surprised you said that, but I thought it was quite nice to have a bit of music for a change, and it's very much Kevy's style, which is super.
And I must say the Creative Commons folder in my media player is quite full of stuff that I picked up from Kevy one way or the other.
Oh yes.
And we had Jeff Powers, aka Geekazine, introducing the various different sites associated with that.
Yeah, I thought this was quite a professional sounding setup. These guys do quite a lot of this stuff, I think, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
Not a content that's particularly mine. Not something I'm particularly interested in, is what I'm trying to say, but, all power to them.
Actually, yeah, each to their own, indeed. And but this, yeah, again, it would be sports wouldn't be high in my list of stuff, but I'm sure it takes all sorts, Okay, the following day, LibreOffice Calc, page styles and page settings in the LibreOffice. We had that discussion actually about why doesn't the LibreOffice people, why don't we burn them DVDs of Kevin's series actually and drop them off at Boston. Might do that next year actually as a collaborative thing, because I've got spindles upon spindles of DVDs here. I could burn them on it.
Yeah, absolutely, great idea.
Yes, now I've just signed myself up to another 6 weeks of work. oh dear. And moving on, 1706 Cross Compilers Part 1, What It Is and Why I Might Need It, by Mr. Mike Ray. Turning out to be a very... This was a great episode. Really explained nice and clearly to me what was going on.
Yes, indeed. No, Mike's very good at doing this in a sort of calm and reasoned way, a well-structured way. Yeah, and...
Sorry, you disappeared there for a second.
Sorry, I just got struck with a cough and had to... Anyway, yeah, I thought Mike did a great job here. I enjoy his style of show.
Yeah, the 15 hours versus 15 minutes thing got me, so you had me at that. Okay, the following day, a tour of my desktop. Very nice, from Visa. This is one that quite a lot of people should do, actually. I wouldn't have thought of myself, and when I heard a lot of the things that he was using, I wouldn't have settled on that myself, but again, that is the beauty of a free desktop. And I remember back in the day when I was a lad, you'd install something like SUSE and you get two DVDs, and every application, you would have a separate application for word processors and a separate menu for DVD burners, and every possible DVD option was there, a DVD burning option, talking about Kevin's episode earlier on. And it was only when Ubuntu came online that the fashion to strip it down and only put in one option for a particular desktop came into play.
Absolutely, yes. When I first got access to Linux, Red Hat or something like that, it was years ago, I just went mad and loaded everything, just grabbed everything there was just to play around with it, so... And then probably threw stuff away or never used it. Ended up with menus stuffed with things I never used. But it's good to hear somebody who's maybe been through that and come up with a set of recommendations, passing on his experience. That's really cool.
Yeah, I have a list like this on my on my website just to remind myself. It's basically an apt-get or a yum install and then copy and paste every time I reinstall. And as I reinstall it every, you know, it's usually there's a year or two in between I, you know, get a new desktop or a new laptop or something for someone in the family that there's a few things that I've decided not to use anymore or decided to use again. So very good idea. Yes, a good one for all those out there who are thinking, gosh, I don't know what show to do.
No, that's true, actually. Just as an aside, I was intrigued that he's a fan of Lazarus. Have you ever used that?
Pascal equivalent thing, yeah.
Yeah, Pascal, a bit like the Borland. Is it Borland, the Delphi package?
Yeah, I was reading that in the show notes as I was posting it, and I was thinking, I know this. What is that?
I did at one time start playing around with it. When I was at work, I was looking for an application I could write database apps in that I could sort of hand out to people in my department. And I tried Lazarus, and I found it was damn good, actually. You can write Postgres tools in it reasonably well.
You're not using Perl, Dave?
Sometimes you have to compile things, you know, it's just the way of it.
Fair enough, yeah.
Sometimes you want GUIs as well, that's the other thing. Yes. So yeah, Perl's not so good at fancy GUI.
Remind me, actually, I have another project I want to pick your brains about as well. Actually, I might.
Sure.
I think I'll just add. I will probably just ask it on the mail list. Yes, 1708, Mr. Lazy himself, JWP. I'm too good. He emailed me a show. We had a big discussion about this at Postem. Without show notes, JWP. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But it was a good show. He also brought up something completely different in the middle of that. It was the nano episode, and there was something else that I thought, oh, I really want to comment on that. Oh, yes, the LPI books. Yes.
Yes, I know. I was just looking for my notes because I noted that as well. Yeah, he said he did the LPI exam at Fosdem. What? I want to know what happened.
Yeah, so do I. Tune in next month and you'll find out here on Hacker Public Radio. Anyway, 1709, Hacking Your Teeth. I'm really glad. I'm glad Mr. X did this, and I'm really glad it's not the show that I thought it was going to be. Soldering on stuff, sensors to your teeth. But he made me a bit paranoid. I couldn't click on any of the links because I was listening to it as I was in the bus. Oh dear, what am I missing here?
Exactly. That was the notes I made here is must buy interdental brushes, which I don't have any.
They're like I'm just looking at the picture here on Wikipedia, and they are like really long, thin. Long thin brushes. They're not like your typical toothbrush, like piece of wire that's straight up with brush coming out.
Yeah, it's, I don't know where you get them actually, but it looks like something that it's worth investing in. It looks like it's something better to use than floss. You know, I've never got on very well with that stuff. It always breaks.
Yes, indeed.
Who thought we'd be discussing teeth?
There you go, HPR. Wow. And is it of interest to hackers, Dave?
Absolutely. Well, this hacker, anyway.
There you go. I like Mr. X's episodes. He taught me to solder. Anyway, next day, 1710, remote desktop GNU Linux. And I recorded this with Easy Voice Recorder Pro. I had three biological alarm clocks going off the whole night, so I couldn't go back to sleep. So I went into work early and then recorded this on the way.
Yes, I thought maybe you were the kids were asleep next door or something. You seemed to be speaking very quietly into it, but it worked well.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I don't guess you have any call for this type of thing.
I don't need to access any Windows machines. Hooray! Mind you, I did at one point in my life, but not anymore. But it's interesting, but just academically interesting.
It's funny, actually. We're talking about old podcasts, the lot of Linux links. A show I sadly miss, Dave Yates. There's always a home for you here, Dave.
Agree.
Had that base name $0 trick. to find out the name of the script, and then you could just call server one, and then it calls a bash script, and the bash script, knowing what its name is, will do something based on the case statement. It was a fantastic, phenomenally cool trick. So I think I know that I got the XR&R tip from some other show, I think probably Klaatu or somebody. So this particular script is nothing but a mishmash of bash things that I found on other podcasts.
But that is the way it is, isn't it? I mean, we all have bits and pieces of scripts and stuff that we've gleaned from other people's work, and that's the way you learn. It's a fantastic way to learn too. I must admit, I did cut and paste your XR&R things just to see what they did, because they looked quite cool. I wasn't quite sure why you used so many tools in there, but I thought I'd just keep my mouth shut this time.
To in answer to your and Mike Ray's discussion about not using XPath, it's because I didn't know how to do it any other way, Dave. So if you can come up with a nicer way of doing it, then please, 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 please paste it into the show notes for this, actually, or comment on the show notes. It works.
I might do that. Yeah. Of course. We all do this, but I tend to look back at them later on and think, "Oh, why did I do it that way?" I can think of a much better way of doing it now, and then go and hack it and make it work slightly better. Just because that's the way my brain works, unfortunately.
No, that's exactly it. I found loads of like this one still uses the backticks to find its server equals backtick base name. Whereas now I've completely switched to always using dollar open parentheses, the command close parentheses, because you can nest those, whereas backticks you can't. And backticks is not obvious what's going on, whereas I think it's more obvious if you use the dollar braces thing.
Yeah, I agree very much so.
I haven't, this script is so old, I can actually tell how old some of my scripts are by my coding styles at a particular time. But there was one thing I did that has been bugging a lot of people and has been getting no attention, is the R desktop command is completely not supporting Windows 2008 with the newer security cert requirements. And so that's why I went out to look for something else, and X3 RDP seems to be a pretty good solution.
Yeah, cool.
So I know a lot of people. If you're being bugged by this, you're going to like this show. Otherwise, it's one of the ones you'll delete, I imagine.
It's actually one of, just referring forward to some of the comments, the business of knowing that there might be something on HPR that you could go and search through and find an answer to your problem is always good. So, it's always good to have these sorts of things as a resource, I think.
Absolutely. Okay, and then we have 1711, which was Swift 110 or 110 or however he introduces himself, and they're going through some video software, which was unimpressive. And it was only later on that I realized it was video recording software.
Yeah, he made. First of all, I didn't know who was who. That was one thing. But I know it was him and his brother, but I couldn't work out who was who. But they kept referring to, you'll see it in the video and stuff. And of course, they never linked to the video. So that was slightly sad. But there you go.
Absolutely. But a follow-up episode will be absolutely excellent. I use I've used FFmpeg, mplayer for that, FFmpeg. And I also have a command line script as well, which I may do a show about, that just does that and it records.
Oh, very good.
And then we have Mike with What's in My Crate, taking the not to be outdone by the rest of us with our bags. He has a crate. And I could see him, I could visualize it very much in my mind, how his crate was being put together.
Yeah, he described it very well. I also used those 35-liter boxes. I've got loads of them in the house for all sorts of stuff. They stack beautifully. So, yeah, I was able to visualize what he was talking about very, very well, I think. I even followed up some of his links there, thinking some of those bits and pieces sounded interesting, like the speakers. So, very good.
Over here in the Netherlands, most people use the Albert Heijn boxes, which is, a plastic crate that's the equivalent of Tesco uses for home delivery. So.
All right, we around this part of the world, there's not much of that type of thing. There used to be a supermarket called Safeways, which has gone bust, which had a box, of which I have many, but they're not stackable, so they're not as useful as these guys.
Ah, right, yeah. Okay, then we had 1713, to be frank, interviews, Aaron Wilson, Free Software Foundation Europe, and Tor Project. And it was like as if he had gone out of his way to record the ones that I had missed. I'm really, really glad that he included these into the episodes.
Absolutely, yeah, they were good interviews. I found them most intriguing. I liked his questions too, about the British government responding by saying, "Oh, look, a bad thing happened. Oh, I know. Let's stop encryption. Let's have cameras in every house or something."
Yes.
It's yeah, good, very good point he made there.
Absolutely. And Vim Hints 001, about time, Dave, about time.
Yes, well, I don't know quite whether I've set this at too low a level. I really hesitated a long time thinking about it. I've been thinking about this for a year or more, thinking it would be quite nice to pass on some of this stuff, but it's a hard subject to talk about, and you really need to start from ground zero type of thing, I feel. But when I listened to it, I thought, God, this guy's boring. What is he on about?
No,
But
not at all, because you land at a server and there's nothing but Vim there. It's a very, very, very scary world.
well, I've been there and I've watched other people doing this as well and sort of fumbling about with Vim and then crashing out of it, not knowing how to get out of it, and ending up with bits and pieces all over the place, or with a thing that can move around very rapidly, just going cursor up, 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 up multiple times. So I thought, well, if I base it around that sort of scenario, then it might turn out to be a useful series to do. So anyway, we'll see.
It was high on my list of requested topics to you in particular. I still don't know why the H, J, K, and L. I know why they are there, but I don't know why in this day and age you can't assume that there's arrow keys on the keyboard.
I put it down to the quality of typist that you are, because I think my son, for example, who's taught himself touch typing, is a very fast typist. I think that sort of approach appeals to him, whereas me, as I said in the podcast, is more of a hunt and peck old geezer type of typist. I don't use that at all, but.
Do you
I don't
use the
know.
arrow keys or you use
Yeah, I
HJK?
use the arrow keys and a bit of mouse and stuff like that.
Oh, okay, same here. Okay, I need to learn to touch that. And a question for the education system in general. Why the hell are people giving schools laptops or kids laptops, giving them iPads and not teaching them to type? Like, seriously, folks, what is going on with the education system that the still typing is still not a required subject?
Very much so, very much so. I mean, it used to be a thing that only girls did because they were going to be secretaries, weren't they? And so they had to learn to type on a typewriter, of course. But it's mad because keyboard skills are so important today.
And I just have no idea why that is not in place. Anyway, enough about that. Enough about that. The final show, I think, 1715, is that correct?
That's right, yep.
LibreOffice Calc Cell Styles, also Goodman. In this series, finally figured out how to change that annoying thing where you can print grid lines on your spreadsheets. Because every single time I have to go in and change that, and it never dawned on me that there would be a style sheet that you could change it.
I really got to follow this one up and learn more from this. I was listening trouble with Ahuka's, well, I say trouble with, I mean, the thing about Ahuka's episodes is you've really got to be sat down there with an instance of calc running in front of you to really get the most out of it. And I'm not always that good at doing that. I quite agree. There's so much in there. And he's pointing out all of this really cool stuff. It's going to be so useful, I think.
Absolutely. I don't know. I probably in my past have used spreadsheet programs so often that I know the menus inside and out from everywhere, you know, and it never just struck me to go. So when I hear his shows, I'm doing whatever I'm doing, but the application is floating in front of my head, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I do, very much so, yeah.
Alrighty, with the new and improved mailing list discussion, Dave, I just want to take some time out here to absolutely thank you for the script for making the show notes for these episodes. It was a pain in the arse doing this every month, and now you have completely taken it over, and the notes look fantastic. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh, that's very kind of you. I'm afraid I'm that sort of a perfectionist that I've really got to get this looking as good as I can. And so the adding the mailing list stuff has been on my to-do list for a long, long time. And it is remarkably difficult, at least for me, to do. But anyway, I think we've maybe got a solution this time. We'll see. Let's try using the damn thing and see whether it works.
Yeah, I unfortunately, Dave, I'm also an evil manipulative git, so knowing that about you, I quite often put things in your way, knowing that it will bug you so much that you will go and do it for me. So my apologies for taking advantage.
What can I say? It's meat and drink, really. I quite enjoy being bugged by this piece of grit and then try and make a pearl out of it. Oh, that's a bad joke. But you know, it's Shall I use the opportunity to rant slightly about
feel free, dude.
Email and stuff, right? So what I tried to do was I discovered that the Gmain system offers an interface where you can go and download a bunch of messages and then you get it in a mailbox format. Well, I know how to read mailbox formats. I did lots of work on mail when I was employed. So I thought, okay, well, what I'll do is I'll go and pull down the messages in this format and then write a script to process them and then process them into threads and display the threads so that we can follow them in the notes. Well, I discovered that joining them, the messages up with as threads turned out to be quite difficult because in many cases, people are not replying to messages. They're simply typing a brand new message with the same subject header as the original, with a re on the front of it, but not using the reply function in whatever mail client they have. So it means that the message is unthreaded.
Doing a new one?
Yeah, because, well, it's the only explanation I can think of, because you know how messages, you know how threads are constructed. There are headers in the message which refer back to the message ID of the previous message. So the parent message is referred back to in a header. There are actually two types of header. I don't want to shut me up if I'm going on too much, but
you are bordering on doing a show about message headers.
Well, I could, but I feel that maybe a lot of people would switch off. But anyway, you only get those links if you use the reply type functions within your mail client. The only thing I can assume is that people are not, in some cases, fairly rare cases, I must admit, are not using these features, and therefore the messages are turning into sort of orphaned things, which are not properly threaded. I noticed that Gmain tries to resolve these, so I came up with an algorithm to do it myself by finding an orphaned message and then looking for the subject line back through all the other messages to work out where it would fit in the scheme of things. And I think I've more or less got it working, but But the one that I can't thread is the one where they don't reply and they change the subject line. That means that, and neither can Gmail, I noticed. Yeah, so you're stuffed with that one.
Yeah, exactly.
The other one that I can't deal with is if you reply to a digest message, because the digest messages are not threaded at all. The other moan, get off my lawn, is that sometimes people don't start a new thread when they should. And what they do is they reply to an existing thread and change the subject line. Well, I haven't tried to do anything about those because it's just too difficult. It's just impossible, I think, to resolve that one. But, you know, if you're starting a new thread, starting off a new subject, then just create a brand new message rather than replying.
Could you, more messing aside, I know I've done what you just described from time to time. Do you think you could put a show together about mailing list etiquette, please?
Yeah, okay. Yes. You might need to vet it so I don't get too ranty.
No, it's fine.
Because I get mildly irritated by this.
We can put a link into that show on the mailing list, sign up page or something.
Yeah, I used to be the manager of the team that ran the mail system for a small university in Edinburgh, and the way that people used email used to really, really annoy me. And so I have to be careful I don't let my pent-up irritation loose on this subject.
You can, but if you title that section as Rant of Dave, then we all know what's coming.
Yeah, when you hear me screaming, then you'll know. Just fast forward that bit.
All right. So we had Charles Taylor with the hackerpublicradio.com squatter occupied lookalike domain is available. And to which I replied that, I had it on back order for a long time from GoDaddy, but eventually we got it. Although GoDaddy, if you want a rant, the reason I went to GoDaddy is that it was registered with GoDaddy. They are deliberately obfuscating the whole process because you don't know if you're the winning bid. So I expected that I would put on buy this domain when it becomes available. You would imagine that would be purchase of the domain, but then they, when it became available, they put it into auction. So then I was very close to bidding on myself. So, and it wasn't clear anywhere in the control panel that I had that, what the process was and what was happening. It was very horrible interface, I must say.
Yeah, it's capitalism, I guess. But yeah.
Well, capitalism doesn't need to be screwing your customer. Capitalism is a balance between you and your customer and both of you getting a fair deal out of what's happening. Screwing customers over isn't capitalism. It is screwing your customer over so that they go away from you and never want to come back again, ever.
Yeah. Anyway, it's pretty foul. I agree.
To quote Ferengi, it's not good. The rules of acquisition. Anyway, audiobook club. It's going out late. Matcher Rules. I've started listening to it myself. It will be February the 10th.
That's right, yeah.
Has that already happened?
It's already happened, I guess, yes. It being the 28th today, yes.
Excellent stuff. Then we had Ivan, who is Epicanus.
I assumed his handle there. I hope I'm not wrong in this, but I assumed it was meant to be pronounced Ivan Privasi, which sounds
no,
like
I think that's his name.
A rather amusing pun.
Oh, do you think? I don't know. Is that not his right real name?
I doubt whether either of them are actually.
As you can see by reading this thread, I find his emails very, very confusing to follow. It is I got the wrong end of the stick with this, and again apologies to Ivan for this mess up. basically he was requesting feedback on a show that he did, and I somehow warped that into thinking that he was requesting that we change the encoding for every show on the network. So less said about that, the better, I think. It's been a long month.
Yeah, I think he was sort of, how to put it, suggesting that maybe some metadata could be added that's not currently in the shows. But I don't think that should be conflated with, you know, does some of this metadata in my show blow your player up? It's more that, you know, we only put out the core stuff in HPR shows, yeah?
Yeah, we do, but there's a reason for that, and that reason became very apparent when I was going back editing all the shows from Today with a Techie and stuff. The audio that is submitted, or has been in the past, now it's fairly standard because we have a page that shows people, you know, this is a recording, this is the settings in Audacity, and most media players are sane now, but back when we started 9 years ago, MP3 was a new, massively new thing, and you would get shows in that had like audio in one channel, or that was completely buzzy, or that was warped slow because the encoding rate was wrong. Really, for the crack, just go and download some of the Today with a Techie episodes and open them in Audacity and just have a look. Like, there's a DC offset on some of the shows. It's like bizarre. So a lot of them, when I started working on this, we were getting a lot of complaints from people about shows not playing, and I went back and had a look. I actually ended up going back and adding re-encoding things from MP3 to AUG and Speaks, and a lot of them failed at that time. So I ended up having to download the MP3s at that time of the shows that were causing issues, open them in Audacity, and basically fix them and repost them. So I did that for HPR, but HPR shows are not for Today with a Techie. But but that has since ironed out, because we basically take everything, regardless of what it is, and turn it into a raw PCM file. So if it's WAV, FLAC, whatever, it just, everything gets stripped out, and we just put it into a raw PCM file, and then from there we can convert it into everything else. But that said, I was really thinking the FOSDEM episodes would be one for chapter marks, would really have been handy.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I did go to a lot of trouble to put the chapter marks in on the website. So if you play them on the website and you go to any of the interviews, all you need to do is put the hash octatorp symbol, pound sign, whatever you use, and T equals the start time and then comma the end time, and you'll be able to, when you press play, it'll jump forward to that section of the audio file and just play that, which is really nice. And that would be nice to have on audio players that would support that. Okay, I mentioned I reserved a slot for 2015-0401. We have an open series that you will all remember. It comes once a year. The Open System Interconnect OSI model. So if anyone, I was intending on doing this, I don't have anything particularly planned, but if anybody would like to record that episode and submit it, just drop me an email, please, and we will make sure that gets updated for you. And then I sent on some cross-promotional opportunities emails, which caused some discussion.
I found that quite fascinating, actually, just because I went into grumpy old man mode and went, it doesn't look right to me. And I thought, oh, God, I'm being, that's completely wrong. I shouldn't take that attitude at all. And then it seemed that the community sort of agreed to a fair extent. Is that fair comment?
Yeah, some people were interested in doing it, but to be honest, I've seen this one came the closest to being an actual real thing, and their site, you know, we do get quite a lot of, you know, Bob's Shoe Store wants to do cross promotional opportunities to you, and you know it's just a spam, thing. But this one, I thought I would fire forward on because it comes very close to the boundary. But I had a look as well at some of the people that they have on their site, and you know, then you can earn a number of points. And I think there was only 23 people listed, and a lot of them didn't have any points at all. And so, not sure what's going on there. But if somebody wants to record a show and do an interview with these guys as a show, that would be good. I think that would be a better approach than having them come on and giving us a sales spiel, because you wouldn't get the tough questions in there.
No, that's an excellent suggestion. I like that. Can I just comment that this particular thread, I didn't want to have a go at Frank Bell, who hijacked the thread at the end, but you will notice that his comments didn't actually appear as a thread because they're stuck on the end of this one.
Okay, hold on one second. Oh, how did that happen?
If you look at how Gmain has handled it, they've done the same, because what he did was he did a reply to an old message and changed the subject. And so it's been threaded. It's threaded by my code. It's threaded by Gmain. It's threaded by any thread aware mailer as being part of that thread.
Oh, well, don't pick Frank out for that. I've done that loads of times.
No.
I'll know not to do it again.
it's just you lose in this world of threaded messages. Then you get lost in especially if you attach yourself to a large thread. People don't see your messages look at stuff after the event.
I'm really sure now. You definitely need to do a. Do an episode, because you know about threading and how it works, because if we know how it works, then we know what to do and what not to do. So let's talk about Frank. He's asking about the intro and outro and about the FTP server. So the FTP account has been changed since then. If you want it, you email admin@hackerpublicradio.org, although I prefer people to go to the website. And even if you want to upload via FTP, you can just reserve your date, fill in the information for the show notes, and then if you don't upload any file or provide a URL, then you get emailed the username and password for the FTP site, as well as my home address, so that you can deliver if you want to post a show in from an undisclosed location. That's pretty cool. Also, I see that Lost in Bronx one didn't get picked up on the Gmain thing, another cross-promotional offer.
Yeah, that was a case where he has what did he do that? I did make a note of this. He replied to he didn't reply to a previous message, and he changed the subject line. So both my code and Gmain's code can't join his message in with the thread. That was the problem there.
Okay, not to worry. I mean, it's better than a lot. It's fine. We get it here, so that's fine. Then the next one was from me, hobbypublicradio.com, .net and .org are redirecting to hackerpublicradio.org. Actually, they're not. They're doing more than that. If you go to hobbypublicradio.com or hobbypublicradio.net or hobbypublicradio.org, you're brought to a completely different site that has nothing to do with hackers at all. And those sites will be will have the text hacker, will have very similar text to what's on Hacker Public Radio, except it'll be replaced with Hobby Public Radio.
That's very impressive.
It was fun to do, I must say. And it's been a long time in the offing, because I've heard from people that if they're at their work, then they can't access the HPR website, the Hacker Public Radio website, because they've got the naughty word hacker in it. So now you should be able to just go to hobbypublicradio.org, for instance, and get to the content. You will not be able to upload a show, because I have lots of checks in there specifically for domain names, and I don't want to make it more complicated. In addition to that, the emailing aspect won't work, because it comes from hackerpublicradio.org. And in any event, I'm thinking the use case where people are uploading in work is kind of relatively small. I can understand why somebody might want to download a show to listen in work, but uploading a show from work seems a bit odd, especially if that environment is blocking access to HBR in the first place. And on a side note, if you are working in an environment that has a third party provider that is blocking us, not that the environment themselves are blocking us, but a third party provider is blocking us, please contact me so that I can contact their provider. I've done this on a few occasions, and when they get a phone call from somebody asking them why this service that's been that has been of support to the community has been blocked, and given all the contents that we have, and that we've interviewed several founding figures, blah blah blah, and we've interviewed people from IBM and RMS and blah blah blah, that they're very 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 quick about unblocking us. So just keep that in mind, folks. And the next one was a bug report that I found and I fixed. Mike has a topic request about AutoMake, and I think you replied to that. I put it on the list, and Tlatu replied that there was a show about that by Nido, and you replied to that as well.
No, I didn't add anything useful to the discussion. I simply responded to your comment about trying to break my threading algorithm, that's all.
You see, Dave, I play with your mind.
I can't. Yeah. You challenge me. I have to come back with something, I'm afraid.
And then we have the one, obviously, about the show notes, and the one about 5150 having trouble submitting shows. Now, we've done a lot of investigation on this topic, and quite a lot of it is off. Is now off the mailing list because I went through the log files, the Apache log files, to see what was going on with 5150. And also Kevin seemed to have this. And I think we're close to identifying the issue. The website itself is basic HTML. We have PHP render the HTML, but the HTML is backward compatible. I even tried it on the Mosaic browser. So there's nothing special about that. Any of the HTML5 stuff should be ignored by previous browsers as part of the specs. So that's all good. So long as you fill in the required fields, you're not going to have problems. Because I check for stuff like if there's supposed to be 12 fields and only 10 get filled in, then it can't have come through the website that time. So it was a good exercise for me to go through this. But I couldn't find anything particular that was going on that would seem strange. But the one thing that 5150 and Kevin Ahuka have in common is that they were both uploading multiple episodes, and we beginning to think now that it's something to do with the caching on the browser on their side, or perhaps that you need to hit refresh or something like that, or that the back button is its back button has been used and it doesn't get a new page from the website, or the website is saying it's okay that the page hasn't been refreshed, or it's possibly something like when you're typing in the URL that it also fills in the previous page that was there, which was the confirmation page, and once you go there you get a 412 or permission denied. But I will say this, two things of note, very important. One is that as soon as you see that you post a show and it gives you the thank you page, you should have an email in your inbox. If you don't, can you check your spam folders? And JWP has reported that there's an issue with Hotmail, and 5150 also had some of his emails, confirmation emails, go into a spam folder. So I'm going to be putting some information about that onto the website as well. Just so that we can, and I'm going to see if there's a way of getting those email addresses whitelisted by individual services. But I think we're close to fixing, to seeing this fixed, I hope.
Yeah, very good.
And finally, we had Josh Knapp, who's basically the patron of HPR, and Vinrev and associated projects. He is at anhonesthost.com, anhonesthost.com, and they provide all this stuff for free, and you have no idea the amount of work that this chap does in the background. So he's got some new firewall rules and intrusion detection stuff in to stop a lot of attacks. And you know, even when we were troubleshooting this issue, you'd see all the stuff that's going on. I don't know if people realize how many many people are trying, jokers are trying to avail of our services. Trawling the website and pulling down, you know, taking murder of HPR is absolutely fine. There are easier ways to do it, and we want to make that possible. But yeah, there's lots of people trying to do interesting stuff, shall we say. And 5150 did make a point that saying, "Are you trying to attack the show?" in an error message that can come up is a bit off-putting. So as part of that, I fixed the error page that you're likely to see a lot less error-freaky, and then put some hidden comments in for those script kiddies amongst us who wish to record shows for us. And by the way, if you get as far as the upload page, then you've already got past Josh's stuff and you're into my zone. So if you can't upload, then it's entirely due to me. So if you can't upload for any reason, please email admin@hackerpublicradio.org. Remember, I'm in a different time zone to you probably, so allow 24 hours for it to go through. What is very useful is the show number that you are trying to upload. A history of the steps that you went through. I was trying to upload on this page, then I clicked this and I went in here, then I got this, I didn't get the email, this error appeared. And especially on the upload page itself, there will be an MD5 string given that will describe exactly what it's an error code. And if you can paste that to me as well, that will tell me where in the process you're having problems. And we can also look at the logs and stuff and see exactly what's going on. But for the most people, I think there's been about 15 to 20 people who have now uploaded via the website. So it seems to be going okay, I think.
Yeah, I've had no problems apart from the one email dropping in my spam folder as well. So it seems to work fine for me.
Yeah, I don't know how to... the caching I can get around because it can re-trigger caching and browsers could technically do something. On the thank you page, I can leave that up for a few seconds and then have it auto-redirect to somewhere else, or I can have a click here button that will bring people back to the home page. So then the last page that they were at was the home page, and then I can force then that the calendar page is also always refreshed on every... you know, you force a refresh every time you go into that page. Whether the browsers honor that or not is another thing, but I can also put in messages about press F5 and stuff. Do you think a show would be... Yeah, who am I asking? Do you think a show... Yes, is the answer. All right, I better do a show on the upload process.
The other thought I'd had was that some sort of diagrammatic thing to show how to do this, but then I thought, well, who's going to do it?
Gray do that for us.
Yes, okay, a braille diagram would be...
You know what I would love to see is a... or love to see, in quotes, drink, is a... or time, what was that they were doing on the New Year's show? Accessibility tools was really cool. I would love to actually use one of those to see how it works, see what it feels like, you know, browsing through a thing of text. That would be cool.
Yeah, Mike's description of his little braille device, I forget what he called it, was fascinating, because he was saying that it you effectively feel it and move your mouse cursor over your screen, and then it turns it into braille, what's under the mouse cursor, which is just an amazing concept.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, there were 17 comments this month. First one was on episode 1522 back in 2014-06. It was how to use Docker containers on Linux. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. HPR is a gold mine there. You don't know when your shows are going to be listened to. So This is how to use Docker Linux. And the comment from was from Windigo about creating a bridge interface. And the command to do that is ip space link space add space br0 space type space bridge. So thanks, Windigo, for that one. Pretty cool. And Mr. Morris had one on coffee. Do you want to give us a rundown?
I'm drowning in comments here. I'm trying to drive two tabs at once. Yeah, I know. I'm with you. So, somebody with the handle 1093i3511 said we commented on an alternative way of making espresso coffee with a device that used an electric element to heat the water. A Rommelsbacher, I assume, Echo 366, and it does look very cool. It looks very indeed. Nice.
It does, yeah.
My only problem with it was the little Bialetti that I use costs about, I think it was about £15 when I bought it, about £20 on Amazon right now in the UK, whereas the Rommelsbacher is £73 on Amazon,
yeah,
UK.
Yeah, water heater on it, so.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, it's if you didn't have a stove, it would be an amazing thing to have, but I'm not sure I'd pay that much.
Yeah, beside your bed. Coffee, I'm sure, no expenses there, Dave.
If anybody wants to buy me one, I'll put it on my wish list, you know, and just go for it.
Fair enough. Charles replied to patronage as an alternative to marketplaces to Lost in Bronx episode 1683. And he proposed the idea of crowdsourcing patronage. It kind of seems like, you know, I immediately sprang to mind requesting for donations like they do on Escape Pod. But that's kind of more... that's a different thing. He's talking about something like Kickstarter or something like that, which could work, I guess. Comment on episode 1687 back in January of this year by Taj Sar,
I think it says, yeah.
By Mark Waters, who simply said, thanks for sharing the OPML. So, very good. Is that Mike Waters or Mark Waters?
It's Mark Waters.
Okay, because I was thinking it might be Mark Waters who did the water swimming in France show. So, comment on FOSDEM 3 of 5 from 5150. Play that funky music. And obviously 50 doesn't read the show notes, because in every show notes, as you should for Creative Commons, music, I gave all the copyrights, including everybody who's playing in it, as I am required to do under the license. So that was there. And then we had an episode about from Mike Gray. Thanks for asking the right questions. And mostly because I solicited Mike's input and everybody else's input on the first part. I unfortunately didn't get to ask questions of the Doodoo Linux chap, because for one thing and another, I completely slipped my mind, if I'm being truthfully honest. And sometimes you come up against somebody who is, how will I say this, devoting a lot of their free time, and you feel a lot bad. I didn't ask him the tough questions because I'd forgotten about it, but it's a lot easier to ask tough questions on somebody who's wearing a suit and being paid to go there by their company and all the rest, if you know what I mean. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You don't really want to effectively slap the guy down for, you know, and squash his enthusiasm that you're hearing in an interview like that.
Yeah, exactly. And there's like two people working on the project, himself and another guy, you know, so yeah. Other projects, I had no problem asking the questions, the tough questions, but yeah, anyway. So, yes, I feel embarrassed reading out the comments for the next one, so that's if you want to do it, Dave.
Yes, this is comments on show 1700, and which went down very, very well, as we already discovered, I think. We have Mike Ray saying this was Ken's everybody's name being intro show being stitched together that we spoke about before. Mike Ray says such a parcel of rogues, which is which is an interesting comment. True enough. Brilliant, a mammoth feat of editing, he says, which yeah, I can only agree with. We have 5150.
Actually, it's 5150's episode comment actually just nailed it for me. Thanks for the great episode, everyone. Everything one needs to know about HBR in 10 minutes. That just put a smile on my face for the whole day, I must say.
I'm fascinated with people's handles. I'd love to know how people come up with them. I mean, I have no originality at all. Therefore, I never came up with one myself. So it just it fascinates me. People actually saying them out loud and stuff is a great thing.
And what was amazing to me was how many people don't put their handle in the show, don't even introduce themselves. I don't know. I always say, hello, this is Ken Fallon, I'm blah, 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 blah. But the amount of people who I had to get a list of all the people that might have done 5 or 6 different shows, and every single one of them just went straight into the text. Hi, this is the text, and I'm doing the text. And then eventually on the final show or second to last show, at the end of the episode, they say their name. And with a few people, I actually cheated and had to get a recording of them from other podcasters who I knew had interviewed them and they had said their name on the other shows. So I had to cut it from there and put it into HBR.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That just gives us some insight into the amount of work that went into this, Ken. Amazing.
And then I edited all of this and then all of a sudden, like, you had... because, as I was saying about the Twat Tech episodes, you had, like, Chipmunk... sounding ones, then you had ones going into your left ear and your right ear, so then I had to go and edit all of them. And I was thinking I was going to do this with a script, but then the only way you could get to do this was to visualize it in Audacity, and you know, kind of guess there's the end of the intro and there's the start of an intro and stuff. I was weeks doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. But well, I was going to say Michael, is that Incius? I don't know if it is or not. Says, thank you, Ken. This episode made me smile, which is a great comment. You can only imagine the amount of work you put into the episode, he says. So, yeah. Thank you for all the work you do for the community.
Well, I intend to, it's very nice. But and then Epicanus came in with another episode. Another comment was, it's nice to hear. As he says himself, yes, he did say that it still takes 8 minutes to get through all the people introducing themselves, which is fantastic. You know, it really does bring it home to you. What we have here, it's amazing. Like when you go to, at FOSDEM, you can go up to people and they were going, okay, who are ye and how are ye community driven? I got this question before people would talk to us. We are a community podcast network. What does community mean? Well, community means we've had 2,000 episodes and we've had 264 contributors. If you want to be 265, you can submit a show tomorrow. So it's kind of a good way to keep the door open.
Absolutely. And the last comment was from JM, who says, great work. I was giggling when I heard my name go by, which is quite a nice comment too. I was just going to say that business of sitting there listening with great anticipation for your own name to come up is, you know, something I'm sure everybody feels at some point. I just thought you put it rather well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I tried to get the first time people said it, so that was my, you know, when I said my name, it was the first time I'd ever done a podcast ever. You know, this is my first show, and oh my God, what was I doing? Would people listen to me? What's the end of the world? So yeah, everybody's a little bit nervous, I think, on their first go. So that's pretty cool. And what I was terrified was, not that I, for the first time, I think, ever, I was worried that we were going to get new hosts in between the time I finished editing and then got to FOSDEM, because I knew that there was going to be episodes, and I was worried that people would have submitted the shows before it went out. Of course, that didn't happen.
Oh, yeah.
As it would have been horrible to have submitted a show prior to episode 1700 and not have your name included. So the following, we had a comment on 1702, which was one of the FOSDEM episodes regarding my interview with ReactOS, and really enjoyed his enthusiasm and stuff. Love the project.
I love this comment, actually. I did like the guy's accent, and his enthusiasm as well. So yeah, more interviews with him was the comment.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next one is a comment from on Keddy's episode about open source CD rippers, and there was missing K3B from the list. We've already spoken about that. And Charles, nice and informative about CD rippers, and he enjoyed the intermission music as well, as did I. Although it should be on another feed. So 1707 was a tour around my desktop, and Marshall Mellows wrote in to say, great job, great deliberately adequate sound quality, informative content, good going Bezra, and looking forward to more.
Beezer, I think he meant to say.
That's, of course. Yeah. That, of course, is why I did this editing, because I do plan to post that WAV file beside everybody's name, that anytime somebody's names come up, we can hear their actual name. So I won't need to do this anymore. The tradition of me butchering people's names will be over.
Yeah. It sounds like a great project.
There you go. And we had a comment on, UNV commented on my episode about the GNU Windows desktop. And he said, thanks for sharing it, that there's an alternative to our desktop, because he's getting the cred SSP required by server messages, and you don't get them with that. And you're very welcome, sir. Very, very welcome. And Dave, I must say, I really like the ordering of the comments this month. I know we two go on about this so much for the last few months, and now people are fed up about it, but it does make it an awful lot easier to work through the comments.
I think it was your suggestion to put them in this order. I simply went with the order that we'd already had elsewhere, but I never felt it was right. So I think we got it right now. So the only thing I will maybe do with it, I'm not sure if it will be useful for people reading this, but it'll certainly be useful for us when we're doing this or doing the recording, is to make the links, if I can, make the links in the comments go to the comments themselves rather than the top of the episode. What do you think?
Sorry, completely missed that. Sorry, you were going to have
the links that are in the comment list, right? So HBR 1522 takes you to the page of the episode on. I thought if I put the hash comment or whatever it is on the end of that URL,
absolutely,
you could drop it down to the comment.
I was just going to email you about that today, but I felt bad because you had just updated the other one. But yes, that would be actually quite cool.
Yeah, okay. I suggested it, I'll do it, definitely.
But if you had the link from I think the link to the episode page is pretty cool, because then when we're reading it out, you can get a summary of, especially for the old ones, if we get a comment on something from 2013, for instance, you have no idea what episode, 0943 was. But if the 123 on the side are actual links to the comment one, comment one, comment two, comment three, that would be good. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I get you. Are they addressable, the individual comments?
I don't know this, sir, but you will find out, no doubt.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I will look into this. And if they're not, then the guy behind the system can maybe make them. So I don't know.
There you go.
Possible.
Yeah, tune in next month for Common Systems with Dave and Ken.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, by the way, folks, this is an open show. I think we've driven 5150 and a hookah away, alas. And it's open to anybody in the community. And we're not married to this time. If there's a group of you, one or two, whatever, want to do this show everything that you need is on the show notes page, which is updated before time. So the only thing you need to do is have read the shows, follow the mailing list a little, and you too can do this show. Unfortunately, it doesn't count for your one show a year. Thanks.
Yeah, these notes are obviously available usually quite in advance of the actual recording. So just because I'm that sort of a geek, I'm afraid.
Yeah, this is the type of geek we like. So anything otherwise interesting or cool that we need to tell the community about?
I don't have anything else myself.
I just had a... we still need to do some more work on the 50... I just got an email from 5150 about the 412 error, so still need to do a little bit more work on that. But we shall endeavor to persevere, and I still haven't put the downloads in. That would be a nice addition to the show notes. Sorry, Dave.
Oh, no.
Wouldn't it be nice, Dave, to have the number of downloads from one side to the show notes? All right, with that, I will run before Dave kills me in somewhere or other. All right. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public Radio. Join us now and share the software.
I missed. You're on your own there, Ken. You're on your own.
Missed an opportunity not singing at that when RMS went past. Anyways, Dave, it's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah, it's been good. Thanks, Ken.
Bye.
Bye bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.